He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to. Isn't he a bit like
Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of today's survival show, helping you harness the power of choice to live the life that you want to live and to strengthen your resolve. We make survival simple, not extreme. Our goal is to help you thrive today so that you can survive tomorrow. Thank you for listening. This is episode number 37 of today's survival show, and I have the opportunity to produce this show while I'm driving north on Interstate 35 between Dallas and Oklahoma City, going on a short business trip, but taking advantage of some windshield time here to bring you the next episode. Kind of a lunch hour here. My phone calls have slowed down, the typical phone calls I get during my business day. So while that slowed down and I've already had a bite to eat, I figured I'm just going to go ahead and talk about episode 37, entitled Complacency is Reckless. You'll see more of what I mean, or you'll hear more of what I'm going to talk about and why I called it that as we get more into the show. Basically, I'm going to talk about complacency that seems to have bitten society lately, and that's where we're at. And I'm reading a book called Shoestring Survivalism by Andy James. I did a podcast on this subject not too long ago. Gotten through the first two or three chapters of the book. Excellent book. And folks, I tell you, if you haven't read Shoestring Survivalism, I'm going to talk about it a lot in the next upcoming shows, including today's. But get the book, Shoestring Survivalism by Andy James. Excellent book. And, you know, after the first three chapters, it kind of made me realize that complacency is the bug that has bitten us. And even though that might sound obvious to some of you, I'm going to point out some things today in this show that maybe you haven't thought of. Maybe it'll kind of get you spurred a little bit to start doing some things to make a little bit of a difference in your life, and why getting prepared is actually kind of fun. It doesn't have to be something negative. I think that's one of the problems, is that it's painted as a negative thing. I'm going to try to do the best I can to reverse that a little bit. And you know, recently we have seen complacency come back to bite us again, haven't we? With last Thursday's terrorist attack at Fort Hood. And if you haven't listened to my last show that I did on the five stages of violent crime and terrorism, go back and listen to that. Yes, it was a terrorist attack, and I called it. I called it the day after, on November 6th, when I recorded the last episode. And the more information that we see coming out now, the more facts that we see coming out on this case, I think it's starting to prove itself that yes, indeed, not only was it an act of terrorism, but you know what? Now we're finding out, it seems as though this guy was trying to contact Al-Qaeda many times, and it was even known that he was doing that. And now it begs the question, who knew it? Did our government know it? Did intelligence know it? If they knew it, why didn't they share it with the military? If the military knew it, why didn't they do something to stop it? And here we go, complacency again. Have we not learned our lesson? It was complacency and turning and looking the other way that got us into trouble. That was part of the reason that caused September 11th. Man, we just don't seem to learn our lessons. And humans, people, just don't seem to learn their lessons, do they? And it's reckless. It's reckless when we get complacent, when we look the other way, when we don't prepare. I'm going to be talking a little bit about that today, too, as to why not getting prepared is actually a reckless, irresponsible behavior. And you will become part of the problem, and you will make the problem worse if you haven't prepared. I'll talk about some examples of that in this show today, and and point that out. And hopefully it'll motivate you. And I'm also going to talk about, again, the positive aspects of survival, because it is positive and it's fun. There's a lot of fun. There's a lot of excellent benefits that we get from getting prepared in our life that don't get talked about enough. So I'm going to talk about that. Couple of announcements, though, before I get into the main subject matter. The forum, we've gone over 200 members, so a good milestone. For, you know, hey, we're still pretty young, folks. We're less than 4 months old. August 3rd, I believe, was the first day that I did a show, and I think the forum was launched. I think it was launched just a little bit before that. I'm having a hard time with my memory today, but over 200 members on the forum, a couple of new ones lately, so let me put a call out to all of you that have been doing such a great job and putting some excellent practical posts on there. And if you notice something about our forum, if some of you are thinking about joining and you haven't done so yet, I'm trying my very best to keep it very, very practical and useful, and not to get too extreme with it. And what I mean by that, it's okay to talk about preparing for some extreme events, you know, nuclear attacks, things like that. That's okay. I just don't want to get sidetracked. I don't want the forum to become a huge conspiracy theory forum, because that's probably it's a lot less probability that that kind of stuff is going to happen. I want our forum and our website and the blog and these podcasts to be about what is the most likely to happen, and how can we prepare for it, and how can we safeguard ourselves against it. So thank you to all of you. Todayssurvival.com is the main website, and todayssurvival.com/forum if you just want to go directly to the forum and start reading it. If you haven't become a member of that, please do so. Also, our sponsor, Knives and Gear, who has been sponsoring us from day one, and I tell you what, I'm really enjoying the SOG Vulcan that I bought from Knives and Gear. I used a little bit of my blow money a few weeks ago to buy a new knife, a new survival knife, and boy do I love it. It's a folding knife, about a 3.5-inch blade, just a phenomenal piece of work here. I mean, this knife, I've put a picture of it on the forum if some of you are curious. SOG is a fantastic maker of knives, right up there with Benchmade, in my opinion, and I got it from Knives and Gear. Boy, I tell you, all my other knives have been put into my my travel bags, my bug out bags, my get-home bags, whatever you want to call them. So now I got well-stocked bags and emergency bags with good knives, and this one, this SOG Vulcan, stays in my pocket all the time. Just love it. So you can check that out under the Survival Knives section of the forum as well. So thank you, Jeff, and thank you for everything you've done to support this show. Also, the last announcement, and then we'll move on, the SAC contest. SAC, S-A-C, Survival Activists Club. You know, folks, not getting active is reckless. And getting politically active, you got to be politically active. That's a survival tool as well. I really don't care what your political beliefs are. This is not a political show, folks. All political opinions are welcome at today's survival show. Liberal, Democrat, somewhere in between, independent, libertarian, I don't care what you are. You're welcome. But just get involved. Get involved in the process. I'm going to talk a little bit about today why that's a reckless act if you don't get involved and you don't do your part. Well, we've got one forum member that I think has scored 3 points so far. And what that means is that forum member is going to have 3 entries into the drawing that I'm going to do on December 20th. Another forum member has received 2 responses from elected officials. He's got 2 entries into the drawing. So right now, unless more forum members get involved, one of those 2 are going to win. But I got a feeling between now and December 20th, there'll be more people that will be getting involved. So if you don't know what the SAC contest is, both on the blog and on the forum, I've got the rules posted on that as well. And with that, I am going to go ahead and bring the announcements to a close. Thank you for bearing with me on that. So let's move into the main topic. Why complacency and why doing nothing is irresponsible. Now, I know that might sound negative. It might sound harsh. And you know me. If you've been listening to me long enough, you know I like to look at things in a positive light. You know, because of my background, I have been trained to look at things from a positive standpoint. But sometimes we have to analyze the negatives. We have to analyze what people do wrong and what we even do wrong ourselves in order to be able to figure out how to do things to have a more positive impact on us. And a lot of us are survivalists and we don't even know it. A lot of us are preppers. And we don't even know it. And you know what? There's something that almost every person in the world does every day that makes them a prepper. Or it makes them, they're engaging in preparedness. All right? Let's use the word preparedness. Andy James in his book, In his book, Shoestring Survivalism, he likes to use the word preparedness instead of survival, and so do I, because survival kind of implies that you're in a crisis mode. And the whole secret to this, folks, is getting prepared, not only getting prepared for a crisis, but trying to keep yourself out of a crisis. That's what preparedness is all about. And there's something that all of us do every day, or at least I hope that everybody is doing this. Most people are... 35, 40 years ago, not very many people did it. Not as much as we do now, but if you drive a car, you're engaging in an act of preparedness, I hope, every time you get in that car. And you know what that is? Putting your seatbelt on. Yeah, if you're wearing a seatbelt, you're a prepper. You're engaging in a form of preparedness. And the reason I say that is, why do you put that seatbelt on? Okay? Probably the reason you put that seatbelt on is there's a cost and benefit ratio to wearing it, right? It doesn't cost anything to put it on. Now, folks, I hope you're putting your seatbelt on, all right? How much has that been pounded into our heads over the years? But I think the statistics show and the facts prove that more people now than ever are wearing seatbelts when they're driving their car. But why do you put that on? You put it on because it's free. And if you get into an accident, you have far less chance of dying, right? Okay? And statistics prove that over and over and over again. Well, folks, you're a survivalist. You don't even know it. If you put your seatbelt on, you're a survivalist because you want to live. You want to survive. If you get into a bad accident, you want to be able to hopefully have the greatest chance of walking away from that accident. Okay, the airbag in your car is going to help too. But you make a conscious effort to put that seatbelt on. Why don't we all develop the seatbelt philosophy? See, it's frustrating to me why not everybody in the world develops the seatbelt philosophy. Why aren't you doing something every day to prevent, or at least to help you, to give you a better chance of living if a crisis or an accident or a disaster happens? Now, if you're listening to this podcast, it's probably because you are open-minded enough, or you have been for quite some time, and you've been preparing your life, and you're just looking for new ways to do it and new ideas. But if you're a first-time listener, I want to welcome you to today's show. I've said it many times. If you're a first-time listener, you're tuning in to a voice of reason in a chaotic world. And we talk about practical ideas. Well, I bet you didn't know it, but even if you're a first-time listener, you drive a car, you put that seatbelt on, welcome to the world of survival. Now, the goal is to carry it further and further into our daily lives and to do more things, but to remember that philosophy of why do you click that thing on? Not just the signs that you see that say click it or tick it. You know, I mean, of course, yeah, you don't want to pay a fine. You don't want to get a ticket. But you want to live. So let's talk some more about that. Okay, folks, sorry about that. A little bit of a pause in the action there. Just when I said that my phone was dying down and not getting a lot of phone calls, I guess people have finished up their lunch a little early. And business comes first during the day. So anyway, let's get back onto the topic matter here. Why survivalism? In Andy's book, Shoestring Survivalism, I like what he says. I wanted to share with you what he said and kind of put my take on it. You know, he says, first of all, the survivalist mindset begins with, number one, being responsible for taking care of my family and myself in a crisis. Now, there's crises of all kinds. And I think it's irresponsible and reckless not to be prepared to take care of yourself in a crisis. See, usually what happens whenever there's any kind of a disaster, you know, if it's a natural disaster or whatever, the disaster is only part of the problem. It's the reaction of people after the disaster happens that is also part of the problem. And so I put the question out to you. Are you going to be part of the solution, or are you going to be part of the problem? The person who has prepared, the person who has taken necessary steps is going to be part of the solution. The person that hasn't prepared is going to be part of the problem and make the problem worse. And folks, that's reckless. That's irresponsible. And not only are you hurting yourself, but you're hurting your family. All right, if nothing else, get prepared and do it for your family. All right, what if you have a weather disaster and you have no resources available to you? Now you're dependent on the government, you're dependent on FEMA, you know, you're dependent on whatever is available. Now you're in this big pool of problems. You're in this big pool of refugees, and now you have to be taken care of. And now you're going to put yourself dependent on those of us who have prepared. That's not fair. It's not fair of you to do that. It's not fair of you to do that to those of us who are prepared. It's not fair of you to do that to your government. Your government's incompetent, folks, to take care of everybody in a disaster. I think that the last several disasters that have happened, I think that's been proven, hasn't it? I mean, gosh, even last Thursday. You know, I mean, the terrorist attacks that happened last Thursday. Look, now it's coming out and it's showing itself that our government's still incompetent. You don't want to rely on them, do you? You don't want to rely on the chaos that's going to ensue by first responders after there's a disaster, do you? So get, you know, take care of yourself. You have to take responsibility. And number two, the second piece of mindset that Andy says is that most survivalists, most preparedness-minded people understand that bad things can and do happen. Don't stick your head in the sand like an ostrich and prepare that pretend that bad things don't happen. They do. And bad things happen to good people. Just the way it is. All right, let's talk about some examples. I'm going to give you some examples. Just see if even one of these might apply to you. Tell me if it's already happened to you. Tell me if you maybe live in a place where this could happen. Earthquakes. All right, any California listeners? Hurricanes. Tornadoes where I live? Hey, we got to prepare for that. Volcanoes. Tsunamis. Wind storms, blizzards, right? I've been in a lot of blizzards growing up in the extreme Arctic tundra in Wisconsin. Blizzards. Man, don't miss that too much, I gotta tell you. Even though I sort of miss being back home, don't miss the blizzards. Ice storms. A lot of those here in North Texas. Avalanche, landslides, heavy rain, sleet, hail. How about floods? How about fires? How about solar flares? How about widespread crime? Civil unrest, rioting, which can occur easily after there's a disaster. We saw that after Katrina, didn't we? We even saw it after a simple event that happened. Remember the Rodney King riots? That wasn't really a natural disaster, but it sure caused a lot of civil unrest, didn't it? War. Nuclear war. And of course, terrorism. Need I say more? Chemical spills. Member of our forum has made posts and talked about how he had to evacuate, how he had to bug out because of a chemical spill. Epidemics, pandemics, food shortages, power outages. Here's a good one. It's happening to a lot of people today. Widespread unemployment. Hear the news lately? Right? Unemployment over 10%. Federal Reserve coming out today saying they don't think that unemployment is going to get much better for the next 3 to 4 years. Now, the Federal Reserve has got a lot of problems, and in my humble opinion, the Federal Reserve is a pretty corrupt organization, but I got to tell you, I think that they're right about this one. I don't think we're going to see the employment situation improve for quite some time. And the pinhead policies of our government, we'll get into a little bit about that a little bit later in this podcast, are going to ensure that we don't get out of this unemployment situation anytime soon. How about a job? How about a worker strike? All right? You know, that can affect us, right? What if all of a sudden food delivery people went on strike? Okay? Food shortage. Truckers who deliver food go on strike, not working. It could be national, it could be local, regional, things like that. How about divorce? Unfortunately, negative issue, but it happens. How about death in the family? How about death of primary income earner in a family? All right, these are things that can and do happen. And not to prepare for those is irresponsible. It's reckless. The third thing Andy talks about in his book. Number three, I will create and preserve my options to counter or mitigate the bad things and mitigate their effects. You can't, some of these you cannot control, folks. All right, but the key is, can you mitigate the problems that occur to you after these bad things happen? And number four, I really like, I will prepare within my understanding, my capabilities, and my resources. Folks, you know, we all cannot be expected to be experts in survival. Prepare within your understanding. Know your own limitations. Know what you are good at. All right? And just pick two or three things that you're good at. I've mentioned this before, but out of this list I just gave you, all right, just pick two or three of those that you feel like you're pretty good at being able to mitigate and hold the problems down in case something happens. And just work very hard on preparing for just those two or three. And then, once you feel like you're pretty well prepared, then start to learn about something else. Start to learn about something else and start reading some books and start reading some internet posts. Get on our forum. You know, if you want to get into generators or something like that, you don't know much about it, start learning. And then prepare for either a short-term or a long-term power outage. And number five, I love what he says, what Andy says. I know that preparations never end. It's an ongoing process. Staying prepared is something that it's a lifestyle, and it doesn't end. Once you choose a new lifestyle, even if it's financial preparations, you know, you've heard me talk about before how when my family and I, when we got on the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace Program, how it changed our life. It became a lifestyle. And folks, that's irresponsible and reckless. If you don't prepare yourself financially, if all of a sudden you're now at the mercy of government assistance because you didn't prepare yourself financially, reckless. All right? Why are you doing that? You know, not preparing financially is one of the big reasons why we have this economic crisis that we have. In my humble opinion, you know, if you want to put blame on why we're in this situation, it's because of the irresponsibility of American citizens with their finances. Don't blame the politicians. You know, the politicians are not completely to blame for the mess that we're in. They're making it a lot worse, but they're not the people to blame. We have a Republican form of government in the United States. And I'm not talking about a political party when I say Republican form of government. That's the type of government we have. We have a republic. We have a representative republic. We elect representatives to go to Washington or to go to the state capitol and to represent our interests. Now, obviously, they don't always do that. Obviously, they oftentimes act like boneheads. And then we have the ability to go kick their butts out of that office when we don't like what we're doing. Well, therein lies the problem. We haven't done a good enough job of kicking their butts out when we don't like what they're doing. It's our fault, folks. We are the people that put these pinhead politicians in power. So don't completely blame them. It's not completely their fault. And because people didn't plan financially, and because people made a lot of stupid mistakes, that's why we had the mortgage crisis. Because people got way too carried away with credit. And they got way too carried away with buying homes that they couldn't afford. And people have run up credit card balances. It's irresponsible. And now look what they've done. Now they've placed themselves as a burden on all of us taxpayers who have been responsible now to bail their butts out. And now we got too many of them living off the financial system because they didn't prepare for that possible job loss that might come someday. All right? So you see how all this is reckless if you don't do it? And it's just not fair. It's not fair to us who do prepare. It's not fair to yourself either, folks. You're doing yourself a huge disservice if you're going to live off of systems of dependency. Do you realize that? Systems of dependency are not going to give you a good life. Living off of the government is not going to give you a good life. A lot of people are duped into thinking so, but it doesn't. Just take a look at people who have to live that way. And I feel sorry for a lot of them, folks. I've got friends that are in that situation. And let me tell you, it's not a pretty life. And especially after a disaster, it's not going to be fun living off of the systems of dependency and the support systems that you're going to get after there's a disaster. You're going to live a lot better using your own support systems that you took time to develop ahead of time. So that's the point that I'm trying to make here, is don't be irresponsible that way. And realize that preparations never end. Realize that it's a change of lifestyle. And too many folks believe that preparedness involves amassing these large, expensive quantities of supplies. You know, and so they feel like it's too overwhelming. They just think, I just can't do that because it's just way too overwhelming. There's just no way I'm going to be able to amass all that. I don't have the money for it. I can't do it. You need to read Shoestring Survival because Andy talks about how to do it on a very limited budget. The next several shows, I'm going to talk a lot about this book and some of the concepts. But again, I'm going to leave it up to you to get the book and to you to be responsible enough to read some of the details and the finer points of that book. But it's very well written. And you know, I know that some of this stuff can seem kind of daunting. I mean, paying for rent or mortgage and your kids' college funds, medical bills, which seems to hit a lot of us, car payments. Well, of course, you know, if you're smart, hopefully you won't have any car payments if you buy your vehicles correctly. But even if you buying food, a lot of us are still dependent on the grocery store for our food, or at least for a vast majority of it. Okay, paying for power. A lot of us, even though we're trying to get less dependent on the power company, some of us still have to depend on the power company for all or most of our energy. And a lot of this stuff can seem kind of daunting and it can seem kind of overwhelming. And sometimes a lot of us just scratch our head and think, oh, how do I get it done? You know, saving for retirement. Alternative investments. What should I buy? When should I buy it? And so if this seems overwhelming, that's why I say just pick two. Pick two of the disasters on the list that I talked about. Civil unrest, maybe. All right? Prepare yourself for that. Okay? Do you own any firearms? If you live in a part of the country or a part of the world where it's legal to own firearms and you don't own one, that's irresponsible. That's reckless. You're not preparing yourself in case there could be some civil unrest or crime that's perpetrated against you. You have no way to defend yourself. You have no way to defend yourself in case somebody's trying to take what you have. Okay, let's say you've worked so hard to prepare. You've stored food, you've stored water, you've stored supplies. You have alternative means of energy, but you have no way to defend it. And there's civil unrest and there's a disaster and someone's coming to try to take it away from you. The have-nots start rioting. Now what are you going to do? All right, don't let your political beliefs, if you have political beliefs against guns, for example, drop that stuff. Drop that belief. That's irresponsible. And I think it's also very irresponsible for jurisdictions and governments to prevent citizens, to deny them that right to protect themselves if a disaster should occur and someone's trying to take what they have. That's very irresponsible of the government to do that. And if you're frustrated and that's something that's important to you, maybe consider moving. All right? I know that sounds drastic, but, I got to ask you, how much value do you put on being able to defend yourself and your family? Something to consider. Okay? Maybe for you it's blizzards. All right? Maybe you live in a part of the country or part of the world where we're coming into wintertime. It gets real, very cold, very snowy. Blizzards are a problem. Prepare for that. Maybe you live in an area where next spring tornadoes are a problem. Maybe you live where I live in North Texas. Maybe you live in Oklahoma. Maybe you live in Kansas, Missouri. Maybe you live in Tornado Alley. That's something that you feel like you can prepare for? Pick that one. You live in California, you live in another part of the world where earthquakes can happen? Pick that one. Again, pick a few that you can do. Not to pick them and not to prepare, irresponsible. The next subject I want to talk about is the impacts. And one of the best things I've read so far in this book is Andy James talks about the impacts. And he talks about the focus on a narrower field of impacts. And what he's talking about are things that include like loss of safety. When something goes wrong, when something bad happens, you can incur a loss of safety. And that includes immediate impacts like flooding, radiation, chemical spills, fires, epidemics, structural damage. All of a sudden now your safety is in jeopardy. Do you have preparations in place to help ensure your safety? The next impact that can happen on your life or a person's life, loss of shelter. Okay? Man-made and natural disasters can destroy homes, make them uninhabitable. We've seen that. Cause you to evacuate. All of a sudden now you're without shelter. Okay, loss of shelter might include being exposed to elements, of course. Life-threatening temperatures. Here where I live in the summertime, it'd be 110 degrees easily. You have no shelter. All of a sudden, now guess what? You're exposed to 110 degrees, heat stroke, heat exhaustion. Are you prepared for stuff like that? What if you have a power outage during a heat wave? What if you have a power outage during a blizzard? Can't heat your home. And with weather events, another impact that can happen, loss of power. Okay, short-term losses of power. Long-term losses of power. They can be addressed with readily available supplies, generators, and temporarily altering your lifestyle for the smaller, shorter power outages. But things that you can do. Longer-term might be a little bit more difficult to prepare for. Another impact Andy talks about, loss of water. Okay, loss of water will cause problems. With having enough drinking water, maintaining proper hygiene. Can't fight a fire if you don't have water. About loss of food sources. That's another impact. Food shortages can occur almost any time. If you think about the process that food goes through from the farm to the consumer, by the time, from when it leaves the farm, by the time it gets to you, the consumer, all sorts of things can happen, folks, to cause a food shortage. All kinds of events. In addition to shortages, what if the food supply gets contaminated? All right? That could be an issue. If there's a nuclear attack, biological attack, terrorist attack of some type, chemical threats, you don't have any food put away? Food shortage is going to have a huge impact on you, a huge negative impact. Loss of transportation is another one that he talks about. All of a sudden, you could be suddenly isolated due to lack of road access. Yeah, maybe you're trying to get from point A to point B, and all of a sudden there's no more access. All the roads are closed off. Something's happened. There's no way to get there. You know what that also means? Emergency services can't get to you either. If you can't get to a point, or let's say if you've already gotten to where you're going, and all of a sudden you can't get back home, and all the roads are closed off, some kind of a disaster happens, the roads are impassable. Now emergency help cannot get to you either. Loss of communication can also occur. Another impact Andy talks about. A lot of forms of communication are dependent upon electricity. Okay, what if there's a power outage? Are you prepared for that? Communication can't run because it doesn't have any power. Complicates a lot of problems. How about a loss of emergency and medical services and medical supplies? It's another impact. Paramedic and fire services might be unable to cope with the huge problems after a disaster. And this is where I talked about earlier, you're being kind of irresponsible if you aren't prepared with first aid. You aren't prepared to render some of your own medical services. Okay, you're placing way too much of a burden on the EMTs and the paramedics and FEMA and the people that are going to be trying to administer medical aid to people who are wounded and injured. And if that's you, what if they can't get to you? What if they're overburdened? What if there's not enough of them? What are you going to do? Another impact he talks about is loss of societal order. Rioting, looting, violent crime, arson, all threats that arise when law enforcement is overwhelmed and criminals realize that now they have an opportunity during a crisis. And another impact that I really like, he talks about loss of stability. The trauma and the uncertainty generated by disasters and hard times are very real impacts that have to be recognized and have to be managed. And the key to all this is understanding what could happen to you. And I have no way of knowing, because I have listeners from all over the world and from all walks of life, I have no way of knowing what could happen to you. That's your responsibility. But to not take that responsibility is reckless and it's dangerous. Even simple things, folks, like not neglecting the basics. Keeping your vehicle in good working order. Even doing things like keeping your vehicle maintained. Oil changes, fluid changes, brakes, tires. That's a form of preparedness. That's a form of survivalism. That's something people do all the time. They don't even realize it. And if you're the kind of person that doesn't do that, maybe even something as simple as that can be one of your first goals in getting more prepared. You know, if you have to evacuate, what about the vehicle that you're going to use? Have you determined what vehicle you're going to use if you have to leave your house? And is it in good working condition? Will it get you to where you need to go? Even if the roads are passable, all right, is your vehicle going to hold up? What if you have to go several hundred miles? What are the chances of your vehicle holding up and being able to get there without any major problems occurring? The last thing you need is vehicle problems when you've already had one disaster hit you and now you're trying to get to a point of safety and all of a sudden your vehicle dies. But don't be complacent about these things. Don't be complacent about the basics. Complacency is what kills us. Complacency is what robs us of joy in our life. Do you realize that? I mean, think about it. For many, many years, we've been complacent, even with what we teach our kids. And I'm not saying you as parents, I'm not criticizing you as parents, but our society. Folks, we have been complacent. We have been letting our schools and our society teach our kids that dependency is a good thing. We have been lax, some of us have been lax, and we've been allowing schools and government entities to teach our kids, and this has been going on for decades, 30, 40, 50 years, we've been teaching them, our kids, there's no right from wrong. Right? There's no winners. There's no losers. You have to be politically correct. You have to make sure that you don't offend anybody. Folks, political correctness is part of what caused this mess at Fort Hood last week. We're so darn worried about diversity in our military. We're so worried about appealing to everybody and this diversity movement that we're ignoring the fact that we got people in our own military that have ties to terrorism. But we accept it. We look the other way. Why? All in the name of political correctness. All in the name of making sure that we're diverse. And this has been going on 30, 40, 50 years. And so it's no wonder that when the younger generation of today has the opportunity to vote for more government dependency, more big government, more government solving their problems, no wonder they do. It's what they've been taught. And there's a lot of people out there, maybe not you that's listening to this podcast, but there's a lot of people out there that have failed as parents because they have accepted the status quo. They have accepted the fact that it's okay that you can live on unemployment if you lose your job. Don't worry. Don't save. They haven't stressed the importance of teaching their kids to save money, to start teaching them when they're 6, 7, 8 years old, 12 years old, to save and put away so that you have this nest egg. So if you ever find yourself when you're older, son, as you get older and you lose your job, you have a nest egg, so you don't have to live on unemployment. So maybe your lifestyle won't be altered that badly between the time that you lose your job and you find a new one. Too many of us have been lax on that kind of stuff. We haven't paid attention to it. And of course, couple that with our society, our government, and our schools indoctrinating young people that it's okay to become dependent. I wasn't raised that way. Thank God I wasn't raised that way. And to my mom and my stepdad who raised me, if you're listening today, thank you. Thank you for teaching me that it's important to be self-reliant, that it's important to take care of myself and to not rely. Because when you did that and you taught me that at an early age, you opened my mind up. But it's never too late, folks. If you weren't raised that way, it's not too late to start paying attention. It's not too late to say, I'm going to quit being complacent. It's not too late to say, hey, you know, bad things can and do happen, and I'm going to be part of the problem if I'm not prepared. And it's not too late to say, you know, it's not fair. It's not fair to me. It's not fair to my spouse. It's not fair to my kids if I don't know how to handle a problem that could come my way. It's not too late to write down the impacts that could happen. It's not too late to pause this podcast right now and write down loss of safety, loss of shelter, loss of power, loss of water, loss of food services, loss of transportation, loss of communications, loss of emergency and medical services, loss of societal order, and loss of stability. It's not too late to write those down and examine those and have a talk with your family and analyze it and say, hey, you know, which of these should I be preparing for? Should I prepare for all of them? Which of these can I afford to start doing right now? You know, there's so much free stuff that you can do to prepare. And that's what Shoestring Survivalism is all about. And I'm going to talk about some of those free things in upcoming shows. Or there are things, very, very little cost that you can do that even puts you one, just a little bit. And it gets you one step closer to being less dependent if something happens. But it's not too late to start thinking about this stuff. It's not too late to start saving money. Do you realize that that what would happen if people would have, years and years ago, paid more attention to the importance of just saving money? I realize it's a problem that we have a consumer-based society. But think about this. The biggest reason why people don't have disposable income today, or income that they can spend, you might think, well, the biggest reason that people don't have enough money to spend right now is because they don't have jobs, they're unemployed, or they're not making what they used to make. No, no. That's a big part of the problem, yes. They didn't save. They didn't put away. They didn't sock away for a rainy day. That's what would help the economy. The economy will improve when people save more. Do you realize that? That you're not going to hear that a lot. You're not going to hear a lot of people talk the way I'm talking right now. You're not going to hear the media talk about that. You're not going to hear the government talk about that. Unfortunately, you're not even going to hear a lot of parents and a lot of relatives and people talk about that. The economy will get better when people save more and they are out of debt. That's when the economy will get better, because if you save more, if you're not servicing as much debt, then you have, obviously, it's common sense, folks, you have more disposable income to spend on preparedness, to spend on a luxury once in a while if you want to buy it and you can afford to pay cash for it. You'll have more money to keep those house payments current if you lose your job. You'll have more money to pay those medical bills in case you've got a high deductible on an insurance policy and all of a sudden something happens and you have to go to the hospital or you have to go to the doctor. If you've been saving, you'll have more. And by doing that, the economy will get better. And only then are we going to see an improvement, folks. Otherwise, I'm sorry, I hate to paint a dark picture, but the government's not going to fix the economy. And the government can't force people to save more money. Only when people start to save and they get out of debt and they're smart about investing their money and investigating alternative investments to also protect their principal as well. Those are the kinds of things that will eventually get us out of this hole. What's the likelihood of that? I don't know. You tell me. But I think then and only then are we going to see real improvement to the problems that we have economically right now. And so with that, enough said on all the negative stuff, okay? Let me close the show and talk about some positives. The peace of mind of being a preparedness-minded person is incredible. The lifestyle that you get to live. You know, it's fun. It's fun learning to make something out of nothing. It's fun learning to prepare yourself and learning to generate peace of mind with little or no money. It really improves your lifestyle. And when you become frugal, and when you learn to prepare, and you say to yourself, man, you know what? If I lost that job, me and the family are going to eat for 90 days. We're going to keep the bills paid. It's fun. It changes your life. I can't tell you, folks. You know, words on a podcast can't tell you what that feels like. It's just, I can't do justice to it. Yeah, I just encourage you to just start preparing, start doing what's necessary, and just enjoy the excellent lifestyle. And you know, because you've saved money in other places, because you've been smart, and because you've been able to cut costs, and you've been able to do and make things do out of low cost and low expenditures, and you want to go have that nice dinner, you want to go to that movie, you want to do the things that maybe you otherwise couldn't afford to do, it's fun. It becomes fun when all of a sudden you can say, hey, you can grab your spouse and say, you know what, let's find a babysitter for the kids, let's go out and let's have a great dinner and let's have fun. Yeah, I don't care if it costs $150, we have the money. All right, we've budgeted for it, it's fun money, we have it because we've been smart, because we've been able to save that money over the last couple of months, let's go have a blast. And you don't have to feel guilty about it. You don't have to feel guilty because you went out and you spent $150 on dinner. or whatever it cost. That's what's fun. That's what's fun, is not feeling guilty. Because you just went out and you got a new gun to defend yourself, and it was $725 or whatever. And you can afford it, and you didn't have to put it on a credit card. And it was fun. It was fun to go make that purchase because you saved for it. Because you cut and you became a survivalist. You became a preparedness advocate in other parts of your life. And now you've freed up that money. That $725, that $800, that $1,000, whatever it was that you just spent on that firearm. Or maybe it was the $460 to go buy yourself a Glock 19, which is about what it's costing in my area right now to go buy one of those. All right, which is a fine, fine firearm to defend yourself. And you know what? It's fun to be able to pull $500 bills out of your wallet and hand it to the clerk at the gun store and go home with that firearm. It's a blast. Let me tell you, you can't... I just can't describe the feeling of being able to do that. The feeling of pulling a couple of $100 bills out of your wallet and going to the cell phone store and say, you know what? Give me that iPhone. Give me that fancy BlackBerry. Because not only is it an excellent, fun tool to have, but it's also a survival tool. And to not put that on your credit card. And why? Why do you have the ability to do that? Because you were a shoestring survivalist. Because you understood what it was and what it's like and the fun and the reward that you're going to have later by being a preparedness advocate in other parts of your life. And by cutting back on your food bills. And by growing some of your own food so you don't have to pay for it. Things like that. The little things like that that add up and make a big difference. Because you weren't complacent. Because you were not reckless. You were not irresponsible. That's the positive of all this. That's the reward of all this. And this is the frustrating part that doesn't get talked about enough. And when I tell people that I have a blog and that I have a podcast and I have a forum that's dedicated to survivalism and preparedness, it frustrates me when they look at me weird. And they get this strange look on my face as if I'm some kind of a nutcase. Meanwhile, they're miserable in their life. They're miserable because they're not enjoying the peace of mind that I am. That I'm learning. And folks, we all have a lot to learn. You know one of the reasons why I do this show? I've mentioned this before. You know why I do this show? You know why I run the blog? You know why Randy and I put together this whole thing? Why we do the forum? Because it helps me. It helps us. Sure, I get a few selfish reasons why I do this. Of course. Who wouldn't? This helps me. When the 200 members that we have get on the forum, and they start posting all kinds of ideas about how to become more self-sufficient, more preparedness-minded, I learn something every day. It helps me, too. And I want it to help you. I want this to be a platform to make your life better. Because I know if I appeal to the masses, if I can get the masses to improve their lives, it's going to come back to me tenfold, and it will to you too. But it really frustrates me when people think that all we are is a bunch of nutbags. But it's because that they don't understand the benefits and the positive side of why we do what we do. They are the complacent people. They are the ones, the people who look at you and think you're weird and think that you're a wacko because you're a preparedness-minded person. They are quite likely, I guarantee you folks, they're quite likely the complacent ones. They're the ones who are reckless and irresponsible because they're the ones that are going to be depending on our help in a disaster. And that, my friends, is a shame. So with that, I'm going to bring it to a close. Thank you for listening to episode 37. I'm Bob Main. I'm your host of today's survival show, where we help you harness the power of choice, creating options. We help you harness the power of not being complacent, to live the life that you want, and to strengthen your resolve. Our goal is to make survival simple, not extreme, and to help you thrive today so that you can survive tomorrow. Thank you for listening to episode 37. We'll catch you next time.
Sitting in his nowhere land.